5,072 voters. We had 2,886 voters, which is 56.9% of voters turnout. We had 4,802 against
From high above all other half-witted forms of Wyoming mainstream media, this is Cowboy State Politics. I, of course, am your illustrious host, David Iverson, broadcasting to you from the base of the Bighorns in beautiful Buffalo, Wyoming. Oh, you don't get many days like today, my friends, when you beat attacks so thoroughly that no one in their right mind would venture to try it again. Well, of course, they're going to try it again, because, I mean, that's what these tax raisers do. They never stop, and they never change their tactics. But not today, my friend, and not this year.
Read my lips. No new taxes.
Okay, so that's not exactly what the crowd sounded like. I mean, there really wasn't a crowd. But if there were, I'm sure they would have cheered like that. All right, so we got 72% of the vote against this crazy tax-mageddon. Now, I know I posted on Facebook where it said 76, but I was excited. My math was a little off. A lot of the thanks of this victory, this tax victory, goes to the Patriot Conservatives of Johnson County. Without the ground game that we had going on, I doubt that the vote totals would have been nearly this high. And worst-case scenario, it may have passed. But it didn't. And in full disclosure, I am the founder of the Patriot Conservatives of Johnson County. So, yes, I am going to gloat a little bit about this victory. But just a little. But before we get there, though, some totally deserved self-aggrandizement. You can listen to the podcast on any of your favorite podcasting apps. iHeartRadio, iTunes, TuneIn, really any of them will work. But the easiest way is just to go to the website, cowboystatepolitics.com. There you can find all of the shows as well as any of the articles that I might bring up during the course of a program. If you're one of these crazy tax raisers and you think that you can pass a tax in Johnson County, well, you need to go to cowboystatepolitics.com, pull up an article, and educate yourself and find out why that's not going to work. But I do have to hand it to these tax raisers. They did have a point. We do have buildings in Johnson County that do need some attention. Now, not all of the ones that they mentioned, and certainly not all of them right now. But there are some things that we do have to work on in our county. And all of us want what's best for our county. We just all have a different way of going about it. So, we all just need to sit down in a room and identify the one or two projects that we could start work on and then talk about some private fundraising like we've been suggesting all along. And so, we'll be waiting for that phone call. The other thing that the results of this vote show is that the vast majority of Johnson County really is conservative. And they showed it today. Holy cow, did they show it. And I would say, with the exception of a few places around the state, the vast majority of Wyoming citizens are conservative as well. So the results of this Johnson County tax proposal ought to scare the bejesus out of just about every redcoat around the state. Don't even try it with Wyoming citizens. And I'll tell you another thing that this showed is that when you fire up a bunch of conservatives in Wyoming, you can do just about anything you want. And so this vote has given a blueprint to influencing our legislature. Yeah, I know they seem like they're a heck of a long ways off in red-coated central Cheyenne. But the truth is, if we put our minds to it just like we put our minds to defeating this tax, we can get them to pass the bills that we want, such as the Second Amendment Preservation Act that should already be the law in this state. One guy who is really fired up about the Second Amendment Preservation Act is Mark Jones from Gun Owners of America. Now, there's a group that you probably haven't heard that much from. Yeah, they were started back in the 70s by Bill Richardson, and their regional director has just moved to Johnson County. And so I sat down with him the other morning and picked his brain for a little bit. Here's our discussion. This morning I'm joined by Mark Jones, who is the regional director for Gun Owners of America. We're down in the city park. How are you doing today, Mark?
I'm doing very good this morning, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. You're welcome on Cowboy State Politics anytime you like. So, Mark, you're new in Wyoming. And one of the things I like to do on the program is to introduce my guests to everybody so we get to know you a little bit. So why don't you tell us about your family and yourself?
Okay. Well, Dave, I'm no stranger to Wyoming. I've been coming out here for 33 years to hunt and fish, have a lot of family and our friends out here. And my wife and I had always said we would move to Wyoming someday. I recently retired from almost three decades of work with the State Fish and Wildlife Agency and went to work for Gun Owners of America. I could have lived probably anywhere in the western United States, to be honest, because I cover 10 states in the West, but I wanted to live in Wyoming for a lot of reasons. My family and I like the state. We like Wyoming values, and we feel like it's one of the last best places in America. So, you know, we came to Wyoming very intentionally.
Okay, so where do you live at in Johnson County?
We live about 15 miles south of Buffalo, out in the country, and we bought a house and 36 acres out there. We get to wake up in the morning and watch pronghorn walk through the yard and see the Bighorn Mountains. So we're pretty happy.
Welcome to Wyoming.
We're glad to be here.
So could you tell us a little bit about Gun Owners of America? I know a lot of people in Wyoming are familiar with the NRA, but may not be familiar with your organization. Why don't you just tell us a little bit about you?
Okay, sure. Well, Gun Owners of America is a national organization. We have about 2 million members and supporters. We were started in 1976 by a state senator from, of all places, California. His name was Bill Richardson, but he was a very conservative, obviously pro-Second Amendment senator there in the state legislature. He was actually friends with Ronald Reagan, and you and I are probably both old enough to remember President Reagan. And so anyways, Senator Richardson started Gun Owners of America back in the 70s, and it grew from California to nationwide. We have a nationwide presence now. We are a little smaller than the NRA, but we've been dubbed the No Compromise Gun Lobby by former Congressman Ron Paul from Texas. And Chuck Schumer, the awful one on the Democrat
side.
He
who shall not be named.
Yes, he has said we are worse than bad. And we've gotten that reputation because we try to be very targeted. We pick lawsuits to sue when our Second Amendment rights are infringed. And we are very, I think, effective at endorsing candidates and trying to help pro-Second Amendment candidates get through. So we're a little more streamlined, a little smaller, but I think we're very effective at fighting for Second Amendment rights in the United States.
So why is Wyoming central to the Second Amendment fight?
Well, you know, Wyoming has a reputation throughout the country for being a land, you know, that's free with a lot of liberty, and to some extent it does. And some of the neighboring states do as well. I think a lot of people in the country are looking at Wyoming, Montana, Idaho, some of the neighboring states, to see what happens here. And, you know, not to get too philosophical, but the concept of states' rights, nullification, federalism, will some of these states protect and preserve their citizens' rights in the face of far-reaching, overreaching federal government? So I think these states are critical. Wyoming is central to that, and almost all of our neighbors are central to this idea that we can protect our citizens, our state citizens' liberty from a federal government that's out of control. If we can't do it here, we can't do it anywhere. If we can't do it in the Northern Plains and the Northern Rockies, you know, our country is in big trouble.
Well, and I think it goes without saying that Wyoming is by far the most conservative state in the country. Maybe not our legislature,
right,
but certainly the people that live here.
Right.
And I think you're absolutely right that if we can't get things like the Second Amendment Preservation Act passed in Wyoming, we got bigger problems than I think any of us realize.
Right.
So you mentioned that your organization supports individual candidates. Can you give me an example of how you do that?
Yes, we ask candidates to fill out a questionnaire, which is pretty common for organizations like ours. And that questionnaire is actually being developed right now for the upcoming election season. or the upcoming primary. But it will ask a lot of questions about specific Second Amendment issues. And it may ask, you know, a candidate to their position on concealed carry, on constitutional carry, on a federal law that may require states to respect carry from other states, things like that. Because, you know, we have states like Illinois and New York that don't respect, you know, citizens' concealed carry permits. It may ask questions about your opinion on semi-automatic regulation. I mean, it could run the gamut. Usually 20 to 25 questions, very specific. It's a very specific questionnaire. But we also look at candidates' records and if they have one. And, of course, some new candidates don't. But we look very intently at the record a candidate has or an official has in terms of their support of the Second Amendment. Because, of course, you can say one thing or write one thing, but actually doing it when you're in elected office is even more important. So, and we take all of that, we balance it all out. We do not support a candidate because they're an incumbent or because they're the most likely candidate to win. We select the candidate that is strongest on the Second Amendment. And that's kind of been our policy for a long time, and I think we stick to that pretty good.
Well, one thing you're going to run into in Wyoming is just about all the people that are running against Liz Cheney have very similar records when it comes to the Second Amendment. Now, let's just take the top two, for instance, Anthony Bouchard and Chuck Gray. Those guys pretty much have the same votes. You know, constitutional carry, stand your ground. Both of them supported the Second Amendment Preservation Act. Given that situation, how are you going to determine which candidate you support and which one you wouldn't?
Well, that's a good question, and we don't always make a choice. I mean, if there are two very, and we don't know at this point what we're going to do in the Wyoming, congressional race, primary, but we don't always make a choice. If there are two equal candidates and the our base is divided, we may not. But we're also not afraid to take a hard stand if there is something that allows one candidate to shine over another. We will support that candidate. I think a lot of people in Wyoming are waiting to see what President Trump does.
I think just about everybody is.
Yeah, I think everybody's waiting on that across the country, not just in Wyoming. They're watching Wyoming in that race. And I think once he makes his endorsement, that doesn't mean everybody has to go with what he says, but it will certainly be very powerful and important. And that will have to be factored into the equation, and then we'll know a lot more. And then we'll be able to sort things out a little more. We'll see who stays in the race and who doesn't. And, you know, at the end of the day, we'll make our decision here in Wyoming like we do everywhere else based on all the available information and try to find the person that's best for the Second Amendment. If there's not a clear choice, we may not make an endorsement.
Okay. So all gun rights organizations, Gun Owners of America, the NRA, Wyoming Gun Owners, all of them, they all have specific legislative priorities.
Right.
It might be the Second Amendment Preservation Act. It may, in other states, it may be Stand Your Ground. What are the legislative priorities that Gun Owners of America has?
That's a great question, David. And we've got a lot around the country. But I think one of the big ones I'd like to talk about is related to this idea of Second Amendment protection, sanctuary, whatever you want to call it, nullification. There's a lot of different ways to look at it. But recently, both the attorney generals of Texas and Missouri came out with opinions that essentially said Biden's proposed firearms regulations are so unconstitutional they will not be enforced in our state. And I think that's wonderful. Now, when an attorney general does it as the chief law enforcement officer, that's pretty powerful. Obviously, every AG in every state won't do that. There's a lot of ways to get us to that point, whether it's through legislation, whether it's through the attorney general and the governor taking a hard stand, whether it's through the individual counties. But we're very interested in that concept hopefully being adopted in as many states as possible. Here in Wyoming, maybe that takes the form of the Second Amendment Protection Act. Idaho passed a law a few years ago that's pretty good. Montana passed one recently, and I read it, and I thought it was a lot weaker than Idaho's. I think that all the states in the Great Plains and the Rockies, maybe with the exception of Colorado, which, you know, has some problems because of their legislative composition, but all these states that have conservative legislators and conservative citizenry and that cherish our Second Amendment need to be looking at a way to push back against unconstitutional federal action, whether it's legislation, actions by the AG, the governor, all the above. That's one of our big priorities. And that concept is gaining ground in the country. Just recently, another big priority, this is not legislative, and I'll come back to that if you want me to, but, you know, we spend a lot of time in the courts. And we have sued the Biden administration over their bump stock ban. And a lot of people may be saying, well, what's a bump stock? I don't even know what it is.
Well, why don't you tell us?
Yeah, well, it's a device that you can attach to, an AR-15, and it allows the gun to fire. Recoil from the gun can help it fire rather than just having to pull the trigger in the traditional way.
Now, hold on just a second. So one of the big arguments that the Democrats always use is all of these AR-15s are assault weapons and they're machine guns.
Right.
And let's just stop for a minute. And could you explain what the difference between an actual assault weapon and an AR-15 is?
Right. Yeah. The types of true assault weapons are military style weapons that our military uses have the capability of firing fully automatic, where you hold the trigger down and it continues to fire. The kinds of weapons that most Americans have, the AR-15 is a semi-automatic rifle. You have to pull the trigger, it fires, it recoils, there's a pause, you pull the trigger again. That is what most Americans have. And what the feds are trying to do is define that as a machine gun, essentially, or as a fully automatic weapon, even though it's not. And they're trying to confuse people by using the term assault weapon. And then they want to use the National Firearms Act, which was passed many years ago, to regulate these weapons as machine guns, essentially. And all we've done is go to court and say, you cannot do through regulation something that's unconstitutional and that something that you cannot do through Congress.
Exactly.
Don't use regulatory action by one or two people in the ATF or in the Biden administration to impose a, in quotation marks, law on the whole country that you can't get through Congress. And that's why we won in court in the first round. The judges said, this is unconstitutional. You can't do it. Well, of course, the left appealed, because the Biden administration appealed. Well, they have the benefit of an unlimited amount of money, our money as taxpayers, to pursue these crazy actions. So this will go on in court. Now, the great news is that 18 attorneys general, I think's the right way to say it, joined our lawsuit after we won the first round. Interestingly enough, Dave, you'll find this interesting. The NRA finally got on board after we won the first round. You can look this up for yourself. They were not involved in this lawsuit till after we won round one. Anyway, so 18 attorneys general, including the Attorney General of Wyoming, joined our lawsuit, filed amicus briefs about 2 weeks ago, maybe a week and a half. And we just put out a news alert about that yesterday, thanking those attorneys general. Montana, Wyoming, Utah, Idaho, Nebraska, and South Dakota were all states that border us that joined that lawsuit. So that's good news. When 18 of the 50 attorneys general in the United States join in with an organization that is suing the federal government, that's big. So while that wasn't, it's a long answer, and you were asking about legislative priorities, and I got into the courts. You know, those are the kinds of things we do to try to defend our Second Amendment rights. Other legislative priorities are things like constitutional carry.
We have in Wyoming.
We have it in Wyoming. The problem is, if you leave here in Wyoming, let's say you have family in Virginia, where I was born and raised, and you want to go back to Virginia and see your family, you have to go through Illinois. I call it the People's Republic of Illinois. You will not be allowed to even have your weapon accessible legally in the state of Illinois. You'll have to take it, if it's a semi-automatic pistol, take the magazine out, separate the magazine from the pistol, put it where you cannot access it in your automobile. You're not allowed to even stop for the night there. You've got to travel through. You can only buy gas and food. That's current law. To me, that's unconstitutional. As an American citizen, you should be able to travel throughout this country and have your Second Amendment rights intact and your ability to protect yourself and your family. So we're fighting for things like that as well. And I'd be happy to, discuss more if you want to talk about legislation.
We'll get back to two of my favorite subjects in just a moment. Guns and beating dumb tax proposals. But first, an obscene profit timeout. Here at Cowboy State Politics, we're a little bit old-timey about some things. Yeah, we yearn for the days of old where things were different. But we're not the only ones. Our program sponsor, Morton Buildings, looks at things the way we do, which is why this program is brought to you by them. I bring you the Morton Buildings Lessons in Classic Values. Lesson number one, chivalry. So right now, your wife can't get her car into the garage because all of your fancy, expensive, fun toys are cluttering the whole thing up, and she's left out in the cold. And Lord help you if she has to walk from her car to the front door in the rain. No, we shouldn't do that, gentlemen. Instead, you should call Nick or Jesse at Morton Buildings at 307-674-2532 and have them make a building for you that you could house all of your fancy, fun, expensive toys in, and so they won't be cluttering up the garage. See, then your wife could pull her car into the garage and she won't be waiting out in the cold. And frankly, neither will you be. If you don't want your wife to know what you're up to, you could always check them out on their website at mortonbuildings.com. This has been Lessons in Classic Values, Chivalry, also known as Keeping You Off the Couch, brought to you by Morton Buildings. Don't forget about the Cowboy State Politics Facebook page. Like it, share it, tell everybody you know about it. Of course, I'll post all of the episodes there, but I also post any of the articles that I think you might find interesting, so keep checking on that and make sure you like it and share it. The new Wing It food truck schedule is posted on the website. Today, that's Wednesday, they'll be over in Sundance, Wyoming. Tomorrow, in Gillette, Wyoming at Tractor Supply. And on Friday, they'll be at the Blacktooth Brewery in Sheridan, Wyoming. You really don't want to miss these wings. I had lunch there yesterday, and those garlic parmesan wings are absolutely to die for. Make sure that you go check them out. And now, back to the program.
Oh, one thought comes to mind. A lot of people build their own AR-15s. They order a lower off the internet, which is entirely legal and it's entirely constitutional. Right. And they make their own custom rifle. But one regulation that they've been trying to push recently concerns short-barreled rifles.
Right.
Could you talk about that for a little bit?
Yeah, they're trying to. The feds are looking for, or the Biden administration, they're looking for every little loophole possible to define commonly used weapons as in a way that they can put them under the National Firearms Act. Therefore, they can heavily regulate them. They can force them to be registered. They can force you to have to pay a special tax to have them. So that's just one of many schemes the Biden administration has got to do that. You're talking about homemade firearms. Essentially, you order the components and you put it together in your own home. I think they're calling those ghost guns now.
Which they really aren't.
No, of course not. But that's the left likes to give things names to demonize them, like assault weapon, you know, an AR-15 that you may use to hunt coyotes. They call it an assault weapon. They do the same thing with these homemade firearms. They're ghost guns. They're ghost guns because the federal government's not able to track them. And I just saw a statistic this morning in a news article. I think the FBI statistics, 2% of firearms crimes are committed with a semi-automatic rifle, 2%.
It's a ridiculously low number.
It's ridiculously low, and that's the FBI's own numbers. There are more, I believe, if I'm correct now, and I have to go back and look at the exact numbers, four times as many people are attacked with knives as are attacked with semi-automatic rifles, according to the FBI's own statistics. So we're talking, the left is trying to demonize a whole class of firearms. The most popular firearm in America right now is probably the AR-15. I think there have been almost 20 million sold. And they want to demonize an entire class of firearms for the political agenda, not for any other reason.
Okay, let's talk about another one then. What about these dumb pistol braces that the left is apoplectic about?
Yeah. The pistol braces, a lot of people that are handicapped or a lot of veterans have to use those. And if the way they're wording their regs on these pistol braces, they could essentially use their wording to outlaw about 40 million firearms, we estimate. So that's another example of where the left picks something people don't really understand, twists it in a way to make it sound bad, and then tries to use it to impose gun control. You know, there's not been an epidemic of people going around with pistol braces hurting people.
No.
But you would think pistol braces were devilish if you listen to some of the rhetoric coming from the Biden administration. Each and every one of these things is just a way to try to impose federal gun control, to either register, tax, limit access of weapons, most of which are not being used to commit crimes anyway. So there's just a different ways of infringing on our Second Amendment rights. All they are. That's all we're talking about with each of these types of policies. And for people out there who don't own a pistol brace or they don't have a bump stock, it's not really about the device. It's about this idea that once they start using their regulations to control something, they can't do it through Congress. Ask yourself why. They control both houses right now, the House and the Senate. Why can't they do this through legislation if it's so good? Because if it has to go through legislation, it will be exposed, it will be explained. Democrat senators will have to make tough votes. So they're trying to do this stuff through the ATF and through regulatory means, completely unconstitutional, completely out of control federal government. And so, again, if you don't have one of these devices, don't think it doesn't impact you. You know, some of this can be used to outlaw 40 million commonly owned pistols, 20 million commonly owned rifles. So you may think it doesn't impact you, but it can. And don't think it can't happen here. Go back and look at the history of what happened in Australia.
Great Britain.
Yes, that was in both places. They started down this slippery slope. Now firearms are so tightly regulated, most people are lucky to have a double-barreled shotgun, which is tightly registered by the government, and there's limits on when they can take it out of their home and use it. That's where the Democrats want to take us. Do not kid yourself.
Well, two things. You know, when Great Britain outlawed firearms, and of course it was a slippery slope. It started with, you know, semi-automatic firearms, and then it went to all pistols, and then rifles, and then shotguns. But through the course of that whole process, their murder rate actually went up.
Of course.
Murders by knife went up when you outlawed the firearms.
Right.
So really, and here's my second point, that all of these regulations on the Second Amendment or on guns really don't have anything to do with the gun itself. It's a regulation on you. It's control. And if they are successful in outlawing firearms, well, then there's nothing to prevent them from doing anything else. You know, the Second Amendment was written not because our founding fathers liked to go hunting. Surely they did. I mean, but that was something they did every day. They wouldn't even have thought twice to put that in the Constitution because it's, you know, you had to go shoot something to eat.
Right.
The Second Amendment was written to hunt one specific target, though, and that's tyrants.
Yes, I agree, David. And a lot of people don't understand that. That you're absolutely right. Our founding fathers had just fought a war against a tyrannical king, and they understood what all historians understand, that one group of individuals that wants to control or oppress another, the first thing they do is they disarm them.
Always.
And it's before firearms were even invented. They took away people's bows and arrows and spears. And after firearms were invented, they took away their firearms. And you know, sadly, they don't teach history. I think you and I are old enough. We probably learned history in school. They don't teach it. Maybe in Wyoming they teach it, but in many areas of the country, they don't teach it like they used to. But you can look at history, and country after country, civilization after civilization, when the powerful have disarmed whoever the less powerful were, whether it's a religious group or a group they didn't agree with ideologically, eventually they abused that group. Usually they killed them. Stalin did it in Russia. Hitler did it in Germany. It was done in Cambodia. It was done in China. It was done in places before that. So I know that sounds a little bit scary, and people may say, oh, well, that can't happen here.
Huh.
Read your history books. It's happened for thousands of years on this earth.
Well, speaking of tyrants, on Cowboy State Politics, I've gone to great lengths to expose how big of a tyrant Joe Biden is, or the people that surround him, because quite frankly, I think he needs to be in a mental institution. But the people around him certainly are tyrants. So let's talk about, and a lot of people don't really understand that. In Buffalo, Wyoming, where you live now, 943 people voted for Joe Biden. Okay. Now, I don't believe for a second that there's a single person that lives in Johnson County that doesn't believe wholeheartedly in the Second Amendment. Maybe there's a couple, but most people here, most people own guns and way more than just one. Yet here we have 943 people that voted for a by definition, tyrant to be the president of the United States. Now, maybe he isn't doing things himself, but he is selecting people to carry out his bidding throughout his administration. So let's talk for a minute about one of the chief tyrants that he wants to put into a position of power, David Chipman. Could you talk to me about him for a minute?
Yeah, Chipman is actually the worst nominee for that position in our nation's history. First off, he has a history of working for gun control organizations. I believe he was a registered gun control lobbyist. And that's a conflict of interest from the get-go. You know, when you nominate people to these offices in America, our tradition has been to nominate people with some level of neutrality, balance. So you've nominated a person that's hostile towards the Second Amendment. That's against our traditions and our values. The man has also got ties to China. We are going to actually be putting out something about this in the very near future for some of our members in this part of the country to read. But and we've been, Gun Owners of America has been working very hard in the halls of Congress to try to keep the Chipman nomination from going through. And there are a few key senators who are holding the line right now. They're Democrats. I mean, Joe Manchin in West Virginia, probably Tester in Montana. Susan Collins in Maine, maybe one or two others. If they fold, Chipman may get nominated. So it's a very precarious position we're in right now. And if anybody's listening from Montana, you need to work on Tester to hold the line up there.
Well, and there's just to give our listeners an idea of who this guy actually is. He was one of the agents in charge at the Waco disaster. He was also at Ruby Ridge. You know, so this guy is no friend to the Second Amendment. In fact, he's no friend to anyone that owns a firearm. He said over and over that he would outlaw every single rifle above the caliber of a .22, which pretty much covers every other single gun in America.
You're right, David. And I didn't mention his involvement in Waco and Ruby Ridge. I was at a forum on the Second Amendment in Casper about 3 weeks ago, and there was a gentleman stood up in a crowd during the question and answer period who was a rancher in Texas at the time that Waco happened. He's now a rancher in Wyoming. He gave a firsthand account of what happened there, and it was pretty chilling. And of course, if those of us old enough to remember that, it was a terrible time in our nation, and Chipman apparently had a big role in that. So folks need to do their homework on Chipman, and if they have any influence over any senators anywhere, call them, write them, and let them know he should not be confirmed.
Okay, well, Mark, is there anything else that we haven't covered that you'd like to talk about?
Well, you know, what I really would like to see in the near future here, and we kind of touched on it earlier, I hope that we can find support here in Wyoming to resurrect the Second Amendment Protection Act. I know it failed narrowly, I think on a 15-14-1 vote in the Senate last time, and after passing the House here. And I would think most of your listeners and you and I and most of the people that we know would probably agree that Wyoming should have the nation's strongest Second Amendment Protection Act. I'd love to see us work on that and make our law stronger than Idaho's to protect Wyoming citizens from government overreach. And to get a little bit philosophical, I think our nation's at a tipping point. I think liberty's on the brink here. Don't take my word for it. Turn the news on and look what's going on with federal government overreach. And I think states like Wyoming and a lot of other states are going to have to take stands under states' rights concepts and resist if we're going to survive with our liberties and our freedoms intact.
So, Mark, you mentioned the Second Amendment Preservation Act, and I think it's worth explaining a little bit of the history behind it. So a couple sessions ago, there was a Second Amendment Preservation Act that was run, and it did pass the House. and went to the Senate. And that's the one that failed. Actually, it was Senator Anthony Bouchard that killed the bill. You know, he has his reasons for doing that. You know, it wasn't nearly as strong as we might have hoped. But that bill failed in the Senate. And then in this last session, it did pass the House and went to the Senate, where the Senate proceeded to gut the bill. Literally what they did is they took the power to protect the Second Amendment liberties away from the people. In the original bill, citizens would have the ability to sue a law enforcement agency if they enforced an unconstitutional gun-grabbing mandate. Well, the Senate switched that around and put that power directly in the hands of elected officials, the Attorney General and the Governor. And then when it went back over to the State House of Representatives, that bill was never brought to the floor. To use a phrase they use at the legislature all the time, it was left in the drawer. So that's the quick history of the Second Amendment Preservation Act in Wyoming. I mean, it's come up a couple of times, and we're hoping that it'll be run in this next session. I have one more question for you, Mark.
Okay.
Well, I say I have one more question. There's a lot of those one mores. So one of the things the NRA does not do is endorse candidates for lower offices, so county offices, municipal offices, things like that. Is that something that your group does?
We do sometimes, absolutely. And we are happy to look into that and consider that on a case-by-case basis. But if we have a candidate that has a history of strong Second Amendment stances or wishes to make that a strong part of their platform, absolutely would love to look into that, especially sheriffs. I would love to see all the sheriffs in Wyoming be constitutional sheriffs. And I'm not saying that a lot of them are not. I'm not really taking a position on that. But, you know, the sheriff is probably the most important elected official in our country right now because of their constitutional authority. So, but for sheriffs and other offices, we can absolutely look into that.
Well, you do know that all 23 Wyoming sheriffs opposed the Second Amendment Preservation Act, right?
I do. And I think that was the whole debate about qualified immunity and concerns about that. And I'm hoping we can figure out a way to get through that with the next round of that bill and get them to support it. I think their concern was that there might be some personal liability for them or some of their officers. Even if they were trying to do the right thing, they might get in trouble. So we need to figure out a way to word the bill so that we can protect the citizens from unconstitutional acts while not putting law enforcement in a bad position. I think there's a way to do that, and I'm glad you explained it earlier, David. You did a good job of the back and forth between the houses, the House and the Senate. I hope that we can learn from the past and get a bill that everybody can get behind that protects Wyoming citizens and that is the nation's strongest protection act.
I think it's worth pointing out, the bill's sponsor last year, Anthony Bouchard, he amended the bill at the behest of a couple of local sheriffs. And so his amended bill that ended up getting killed, or not killed, but gutted, it covered that qualified immunity problem that the Sheriff's Association had such an issue with. Now, the other reason I asked you that question is after the Second Amendment Preservation Act failed this past session, our Johnson County officials passed a resolution that basically said, oh, we love the Second Amendment, which is great, but it didn't have any teeth in it. And that's right. Why I asked you if you endorse, you know, local, county, county, municipal candidates, because I think that they have an extraordinary amount of power, you know, within their county. And if they're not going to support the Second Amendment or our efforts to protect it, well, then they need to be exposed as well.
Yeah, I agree. And I'll say this about these county ordinances or resolutions, and they can be of either form. Those are good. I think now about 60% of the nation's counties have passed either an ordinance or a resolution. Most of them are resolutions with very little teeth, like Johnson County's. It's a step in the right direction. It's good to say we support the Second Amendment, but as you've already alluded to, we need some with some backbone in them that say, you're not going to do unconstitutional things in our county.
And hold those accountable that go against it.
Right. I agree. And I I don't know how many of your listeners or maybe you have ever heard of the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association.
Absolutely.
Great organization. Richard Mack started that. He's really been trying to educate sheriffs about their constitutional authorities and powers and how they're really the last line of defense, and they need the support. You need a good sheriff who understands that and then who has the support of county officials that will back him up, county commissioners and others who will back that sheriff. That's what you need. And there have been cases in the West where good sheriffs have stopped extreme federal activity. And I don't know if we have time to go into some of those, but you know, a good sheriff's the last line of defense to protect your Second Amendment rights.
And
your constitutional rights in general.
Absolutely. Well, Mark, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with Cowboy State Politics, and we really appreciate you. You're welcome here anytime.
I've enjoyed talking with you this morning, David, and hope to come back and talk soon, maybe about some good legislation in the future.
So how can our listeners get a hold of you or your organization?
I'll tell you what, if they can email me at mark.jones@gunowners.org. They can also go to our website, gunowners.org, or just type Gun Owners of America into your search engine and it'll pop up. You can see a lot of information about our recent court battles and the kind of things we're trying to do to fight for all of our Second Amendment rights.
Okay. Appreciate it, Mark.
Hey, thanks, David.
Now, we'll probably be hearing from Mark Jones several times as the legislature convenes and we go throughout the session. I mean, there's bound to be a couple of gun bills in there that he's going to want to weigh in on, and we'll certainly give him the format to do that. One more thing I probably ought to mention about the Patriot Conservatives of Johnson County. No doubt, a lot of you have seen the news articles about a libel and defamation suit that's been filed against the Buffalo Bulletin in Johnson County District Court. That's absolutely true. The Buffalo Bulletin smeared the Patriot Conservatives of Johnson County, and they committed libel while they were doing it. Libel, for those of you who don't know, is printing something that is not true. It's akin to slander. Slander is saying something that isn't true. Libel is printing it. None of the news agencies that are writing about this story, that is, the lawsuit against the Buffalo Bulletin, have even tried to contact me, the chairman of the Patriot Conservatives of Johnson County. You would think that that would be an interesting part of their story, but as of this broadcast, that hasn't happened yet. However, tomorrow morning I will be doing an interview with Aaron Palmer from Sheridan Media, so be looking for that interview. Now, the libel and defamation parts of the lawsuit, that's just one leg. There's two more. The second part is they violated the Wyoming Constitution. That is Article 1, Section 20, Freedom of Speech and Press, Libel, Truth as a Defense. Yeah, they didn't even bother to investigate any of their claims, which is why they're being sued right now. And the other part of the Wyoming Constitution that they violated was Article 1, Section 8, where the courts are open to all suits where your reputation is at stake. And I would say that the Buffalo Bulletin most definitely talked about the reputation of the Patriot Conservatives. Now, the third leg of this lawsuit, which is also interesting, is the Buffalo Bulletin didn't disclose who paid for all of those ads about this crazy tax. And if you look through the newspaper, you'll find a whole bunch of them. Now, specifically, our lawsuit only mentions one ad, but that's only the first one. Fun times here for the Buffalo Bulletin, I would say. But anyway, we'll keep you posted on that whole situation. Finally, this morning, anywhere you look in the news, you're going to see that the United States is leaving Afghanistan. It's a heartbreaking situation where we've done it so abruptly. There's people that are trying to hang on to jets as they're taking off and are being dropped from the sky. They'd rather do that than face death at the hands of the Taliban, which is most certainly on its way. One of the people that knows that more than anybody is former Lieutenant Colonel Denton Knapp, who also happens to be running for the United States House of Representatives for Liz Cheney's seat. He gave me a call earlier today, and I wanted to play it for you. Keep in mind, this was recorded on my telephone, so the audio is a little bit rougher than usual, but here is what we had to talk about.
So I don't mean to interrupt you, but my question is, I just listened to the radio say that the Taliban is going to be recognized as the legitimate government of Afghanistan by other countries. And we just pulled out. So, I mean, specifically, what do we do now?
Yeah, exactly. So we know what the Taliban did to Afghan population prior to going there and limiting them for a while. But the atrocities are going to occur on women, children, and the soldiers and policemen that assisted the United States military for the last 20 years or had any part in their democratic government and establishment of that are going to feel the wrath of the Taliban for a while here. And a lot are trapped in Kabul right now at the airport. So what happens now? Well, we've given up our embassy. We have given up our air bases where we have to conduct strategic strikes, different training sites, not only in Afghanistan and Pakistan, but other areas. We've given up some human intelligence capability in that area, which is very critical in the Middle East, of course.
Right.
And now that we've got the void there, it's going to be filled. That gap is going to be filled. Right now it's being filled by the Taliban as they take over the majority of the country. And, you know, I guarantee that China, Russia, and a lot of the countries that would like to establish relationships with the Taliban will be reaching in there.
Oh, I imagine. I mean, I don't think this isn't a good situation. Well, the way to look at it.
Now, this strategy is nothing that will work for America in the future. And, you know, worst case is that when the Taliban allow terrorist groups to start training there, to start launching attacks from there, and that's why we went there in the first place. So I would say for, you know, all our military service members that they did their job. They went over there, they trained the Afghan military, army, and police. People saying, well, they had 20 years, how come they didn't fight? Well, it's also culture. And when you know you've got a ruthless enemy that chops off heads when they catch you, you know, and you know your big brother just left.
Right.
What do you do? You can try to fight and die, or you can capitulate like they've done. And so the result is the Taliban taking land without a single bullet being fired.
Yeah. Well, I honestly, Denton, I this isn't going to end in any way good for us. I mean,
this is
a reprehensible decision on behalf of the Biden administration. And, you know, I appreciate you taking the time to give me a jingle and give us your thoughts.
You bet, Dave. And I appreciate it. It's just I'm very emotional about it right now. You know, I served there, and I've got friends there.
Yeah.
And I know what we put into that nation, and to just leave without any plan for withdrawal in phases, and to ensure that we have capabilities that we need to maintain peace. I mean, you know, I say, you know, World War II was a long time ago. We're still in Japan and we're still in Germany, and those countries are flourishing amazingly.
Yeah.
South Korea, same thing. Vietnam, when we left, millions of people died, whether it's Khmer Rouge or North Vietnam. When that country was taken over the South, we saw the effects. And not only do we have helicopters leaving the embassy now, like then, but we've also got jet aircraft going down the tarmac with people hanging on it.
Right.
Yeah, and if that's not something for Americans to really be proud of, and the rest of the world that's watching it, watching the United States leave our ally high and dry and just leave.
Yeah, it's absolutely disgraceful. Well, Denton, I mean, we really do feel for you, and we pray for your friends that are still over there, and we really appreciate you giving us a call today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you have a good afternoon, sir.
You too. Take care.
There's not a lot that we can say about that, is there? That'll do it for this Wednesday edition of Cowboy State Politics. Coming on Weekend Update on Saturday, we're going to revisit a subject that we haven't talked about for quite some time, masks. It looks like some counties in the great state of Wyoming are going to institute a mask mandate. They shouldn't. They shouldn't take away people's freedom, but it looks like that might happen. So we're going to begin in Sheridan County on Saturday. Until then, from the base of the Bighorns in beautiful Buffalo, Wyoming, I'm David Iverson, and this is Cowboy State Politics.